We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, I have a fun fact for you.
Wow.
Did you know that in the maritime world, where perhaps you're sailing on your ship, oh no, sea didn't?
I thought you were going to say perhaps I was sailing with the pilot.
It is considered highly unlucky to begin a voyage on Friday.
It's Friday, Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, weekend. Partying, 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 partying. Fun, 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 looking forward to the weekend.
So nobody ever hits the champagne bottle on the ship, cranks up their Rebecca Black, and then goes. That's unlucky, Adam.
I didn't know that. I wonder why that is.
I don't have time to back up these facts.
I wonder if the Titanic left on a Friday, and maybe that's where that came from.
I don't know, Adam, but thank you for bringing up a very pleasant part of our history. We're back here with you. Thanks for being here. Have a good show coming up. We will look back at the Syracuse game, another big win for the Tar Heels. Really just clutch play from Carolina in the game. Now the Tar Heels on the road for the next two in just sneaky, tough spots to go at Clemson on Saturday night and then at BC on Tuesday night. And then, of course, finishing up with Duke. So we'll talk about this upcoming game with Clemson. We will be joined by Tar Heel junior Seventh Woods. Looking forward to talking to Seventh. And a lot more. Adam has a list on his phone.
I got a lot of grief for putting it on the ransom note.
Yeah.
So I've gone to the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
So we'll tackle that. We have a double story time, which they're both a little bit shorter. I was a little bit nervous, Adam, because actually the two stories each involve a Tar Heel loss. However, then I remembered the time-honored tradition. Adam, two negatives equal a positive.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're fine there. So all that coming up. But Adam, let's start with Syracuse. I think similar to a thought I had after the Miami game in that I think a lot of teams would have lost to Syracuse that cold winter night in the Smith Center because I thought the Orange played really well. They shot the ball well. I thought that even, yeah, they made some tough shots. You know, they made some open shots, of course, but made some tough shots. Tyus Battle in particular, you know, hit a couple of long step backs when felt like Kenny Williams was guarding him pretty well. And the Orange just played well, I thought. And yet, Carolina was able to figure out a way to get it done. And whether it was Coby White having another enormous game with 34, whether it was the repeated trips to the free throw line where Carolina then not just got to the line but made their shots at better than a 90% clip, going 34 of 37 with multiple guys having, you know, key makes during the entire game, or whether it was Carolina's defense getting a little bit better in the second half and particularly in the last 10 minutes or so, switching Coby White onto Tyus Battle, which I think made a difference. So, all in all, I thought a really high-quality win against a good team that played well, and yet Carolina was able to find a way to do it and scored 93 points to do it against a team that had only been allowing teams to score in the mid-60s or so.
Watching that Syracuse team play, it's hard to understand why they are where they are. They've got good players. I guess they don't shoot bananas all the time, but I didn't think it wasn't one of those cases where, oh, Carolina leaves a bunch of guys open. It was like you just said, they made some ridiculous shots. There was one in the second half as the shot clock was down to about one, and they just kind of chucked it in over two guys and swish. I mean, what are you going to do about that? That's when you start thinking, it might be their night. But it wasn't. And another thing Carolina didn't do that was a positive was they didn't turn the ball over. They were relatively patient against the zone. They didn't really get it into the middle of the zone as much as they have the last couple years, but they still were patient. And Luke May, pretty good job being a facilitator. Didn't score as much as he has from time to time, but did a pretty good job moving the ball quickly, finding his teammates for good shots. Career high, 6 assists for him. And so I think that was a good win, and Syracuse looked better than I expected them to be.
Yeah, May only had 9 points only, but also had 12 rebounds and 6 assists, and as Adam said, a career high in assists for him. Adam, individually, I think the story was Coby White with 34, freshman season high for him. Had been in a little bit of a shooting funk since that 33-point performance against Miami, but again hit some big shots, some big threes, got to the free throw line a bunch, was 10 of 10 at the free throw stripe. And just had yet another one of those games where for a while he just kind of took over Carolina's offense. And I don't – like for the Miami game, it almost felt more like it was because Carolina wasn't able to get a ton of production from other places at times. This game, it just kind of felt like it just happened because it happened that way. And he – had open looks, didn't force a ton of shots, got to the line a bunch, as we said, and was able to convert. And good to see him bounce back with a big offensive performance. Now his third game this year of 30 or more points, he becomes the first Tar Heel freshman ever to do that.
When he catches it and shoots it, I think it's going in every time.
Yes.
I don't know what the numbers are, but I feel like a lot of times when he shoots it off the dribble, it's because the shot clock is low and he's having to kind of throw it up there. But when he catches it and gets his feet under him, I think it's going in every single time. We talked about All-ACC last time, and we sort of said, well, there's Cam and there's Luke, and, you know, Kobe's having a pretty good year. How are you going to leave Coby White off, voters?
Yeah, that way you were looking right at me right then.
That's going to be tough. But Coby White's numbers are ridiculous. Nobody's done what he's doing as a freshman. And the list who have done it in any year is very elite.
Yeah.
So, it got 3 games left. It'll sort itself out. I feel confident. All he's got to do is just score 30 in the next 3 games.
Yeah, no big deal.
And then it'll be a lock. And also, probably the Tar Heels have a good chance of winning the games. But I also think it's a shame people, some of the voting type people, don't get to see him all the time. And it's also a shame that people spent so much time in the first couple of months talking about what Nasir Little wasn't doing because they missed what Coby White is doing. And it seems like by the time you get to February, everybody's already kind of decided, okay, here's what the story is about Carolina. it's, you know, Luke Maye's really good, Cam Johnson's gotten better, and Nasir Little's not playing as much as I think he should. That's what people say. And so Coby White didn't make his way into those stories. And so now here we are, the regular season's almost over, and oh, he's having a nice year. Yeah, a little better than nice.
That play where he was on his backside, I'm not so sure he wasn't trying to throw it to Garrison Brooks, who was a little closer to him in the past, maybe, but it all worked out fine.
Yeah.
Well, the annals of history will tell us that he, from his backside, threw it all the way down the court to Kenny Williams, who, side note, I thought there should have been an intentional foul on that play.
Yes.
Because he was shoved in the back when he went up for a layup. But that was a heck of an effort, Adam.
Yes. Well, and how many guys have 32 points at the time and are still diving on the floor near the baseline to get a loose ball?
Well, I do think, and I said it in passing there a minute ago, I think a big part of that game was Carolina moving Coby White onto Tyus Battle, because Battle was so hot, and I did not think Kenny Williams was guarding him poorly. Just Battle was hot. And so just to give him a different look, put a little more height and length on him with Coby White compared to Kenny Williams, and Battle still got some points and still got to the line, but was not as consistently effective with White on him. I thought that was a big deal.
This team's got a chance to present some problems defensively. We've talked about it some, but, I mean, they're pretty tall and pretty athletic. You don't have that one really tall, rangy, like Syracuse big guy type guy in the paint is really the only thing that's missing, a shot blocker type guy. But other than that, you've got some different pieces you can kind of mix and match like that. I mean, if you've got a little guy point guard, you can't even try what you just said. So you don't even have the option. A lot of times it's nice just to have the flexibility, just to give a guy a different look, just to make him think for just a second, oh, this defender is different.
So Carolina gets the win, quality win. That was coupled with Duke's loss that night. Virginia then won the next day, so Carolina and the Cavaliers now tied atop the ACC, one game ahead of Duke. The win also guaranteed the Tar Heels a double bye in the ACC tournament, so they don't have to start playing until the quarterfinal round on Thursday. They will be assured of a top three finish in the conference, so even if they lost the rest of their games, they couldn't fall below three. And that is the 57th time in the 66 years of the ACC. That's a crazy stat, Adam. And Roy Williams told me earlier today, we were talking about that stat, and he said, you know, when he first came to Carolina as an assistant, he said, you know, there were seven teams in the league. He said, if you finished third or fourth, you kind of felt like you had a mediocre year or an okay year, depending. He said, but now, you know, finishing the top three is not easy to do, and the Tar Heels did it last year. Remember, I know the seed was 5 or 6 or whatever it was in the ACC tournament, but they had finished in a big tie for third last year. I mean, finishing in the top three is not easy to do, and to do it year after year after year is just another mark of Carolina's consistent excellence.
Just think about what some other programs would do and have done when they finish in the top three.
Yeah.
It's an enormous deal. And at Carolina, it's kind of this footnote that you say, oh, that's nice. When's the next game?
Yeah.
But 57 out of 66.
It's like 85%, I think, or something like that.
And a couple of the outliers are fourths.
Right, correct.
And it's not like you've got 57 first through thirds and then 9 last. It really is. It's remarkable consistency, and credit to largely the coaches who have kind of put that together.
As far as the ACC tournament is concerned, now Virginia is really in the driver's seat because they control their own destiny. If they went out, no matter what anybody else does, the Cavaliers are going to be the number one seed. That's why that loss at home where Carolina had the lead late is such a big one for the Tar Heels. Of course, we know everything that happened in that game. Virginia has Pitt at home, likely a win, at Syracuse, and then Louisville at home. So at Syracuse, Louisville at home, games that Virginia could, you wouldn't be blown away if they lost those games. But it's also worth reminding you, Virginia's only lost twice this year, and it's to the same team. They lost to Duke twice. So Cavaliers are very good again and are in control right now. Carolina can still be first, cannot be any worse than third. The Tar Heels, I do think, of the three teams, have the most difficult schedule remaining just because they're on the road twice against decent teams. And Clemson in particular, we'll talk about in a second, needs a win for the NCAA. And then, of course, they host Duke, and we know Duke's good. Duke has Miami at home, Wake at home, and then at Carolina. So likely, yeah, Miami could hang with Duke, could shock them, I guess. You would think Duke would be heavily favored in both those home games and then coming to Chapel Hill. So that's how the end couple of weeks, Adam, shake out for those three teams.
And there's not a ton of difference between the second and third seed.
No, it's just who you end up matching up with.
Right. Yeah, and if you win, what color jerseys you wear on Friday.
Right.
But now the difference between first and second,
yes,
that's a big
one. Well, it just, as it has been the last couple of years, it's been weird because, you know, Carolina was the number one seed a couple years ago and faced Duke in the semifinal, but that was because Duke had fallen to the fifth seed, again, because of some tiebreakers and things like that. Last year, Carolina had fallen to the sixth seed because of tiebreakers, but played Duke, who was the two seed in the semifinals. And right now, Duke and Carolina would be the 2-3 as it stands at this moment and would meet in the semifinals. They are likely going to be the 2 and 3 seeds. Who knows which one which, but likely going to be the 2 and 3 seeds and would be scheduled to meet yet again for a third time in a season. So it's just worked out that way the last couple of years that they've seen each other a bunch. And it just feels inevitable right now that Carolina, Duke, and Virginia, it's going to be two of those three in the championship game, it feels like. Certainly Syracuse and Virginia Tech, particularly if Robinson gets back, Louisville, a couple other teams could make some noise. But
Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State. But it just feels like whichever team gets the number one seed and then one of those other two after they're done beating up each other in the semifinal, that's going to be the championship.
And it's going to be fascinating to see one weekend more down the road if there's two spots in Columbia for NCAA tournament.
Well, this is my thought on that because I think for a long time it was, well, Virginia and Duke are going to be in Columbia. However, Adam, there's also another one in Columbus, right?
Right.
And that's only a little bit farther away for Virginia than Columbia, South Carolina. I mean, we're talking like, I think it's like a 50 miles or 30 miles. I mean, it really is, in the grand scheme of things, negligible difference. How you like that? I like how anytime we say a word that's like bigger than three syllables, yeah, it's like we need to pat ourselves on the back. Good job. On your second try, you said negligible.
I learned that at the Circle K gas pump on the word of the day.
So I think my point is, if Carolina continues to play well, you know, I think the Tar Heels are in good position for a 2 or 3, maybe even a 1, you know, if thing goes extraordinarily well. But they're going to be a 1, 2, or 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. Most likely a 2. They could bump themselves up to a 1. I think if things go poorly here, maybe you drop to a 3. You agree with everything I'm saying so far?
Yes.
Okay. I think at some point you got to go, we need to reward this team 2. And if the difference is only 30 to 50 miles for this team, which is, it's not going to be, it's not like they're going to go to Richmond or they're going to go to Nashville. It's about the same thing. And so then essentially you're rewarding both teams with a nearby regional, which I think at some point has to come into play.
And if, I think this is right, if you're the number one overall seed, you get to express your preference,
right,
for where you'd like to go. Now, I think another sort of...
Now, let's also remember that what are the NCAA true seeds right now? When they showed them a couple weeks ago, Duke was the number one overall seed. Is that still the case? We don't know. Is it Virginia? That ACC tournament's going to have a big to-do about that, I'm sure. So that still is coming into play, too. And is Duke still on the one line? As of now, you have to think so. But again, they've lost twice here, and who knows what else is going to happen?
If anyone else had had the losses they've had, well, they would not be on the one line.
Of course, but you said the key term, if anyone else.
Right.
It's not anyone else.
I think the interesting thing about this three-way tie situation, or it's not tie, but this kind of these three teams that are involved, like you talked about moving Virginia to Columbus. Well, that leaves Carolina and Duke together in Columbia, and there's also this theory that maybe Duke doesn't want to be with Carolina because they've been with Carolina before and ended up basically playing road games in the second day. And I think that – I don't particularly see Columbia as a Duke stronghold, even maybe not as much as, say, what if they went to Hartford? I bet there's probably more Duke fans close to Hartford than there is to Columbia. So I don't know if that's true or not. I just know that's a theory that people feel like it has hurt Duke being with Carolina in the same pod in the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament. So have they expressed that to anyone? Is that true? Don't know. If I was a Duke person, I could see where that would make sense. I don't want to play a game where an NCAA tournament game, second round game against a team that's probably pretty decent, where there's going to be at least half the place as Carolina fans going crazy for the other team. That's not a reward for me in this scenario.
Right.
So I could see where they might not want that. Maybe they would rather go to Columbus and you send Virginia and Carolina there because Carolina fans don't really care about Virginia. I think some Carolina fans would cheer for Virginia. They would not cheer for Duke, I can promise you that.
Sure.
So
this ain't 1991.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that's going to be a really interesting setup. And you kind of threw out there something that I've heard people talking about, like could Carolina get up to a one? Hold on a minute. If Carolina wins out, wins all the rest of the games, including the ACC tournament,
of course they'd be a one.
If they're not a one, there should be a congressional investigation.
Right, of course there'd be a one.
I don't expect that to happen.
Right.
Because I don't expect that to happen. But if they did, we're talking about a completely different scenario.
No doubt. I don't think the Tar Heels are going to fall any worse than a three seed at this point. But I think they certainly can get to a one seed. If it was today, Carolina would probably be a two. A high, like one of the, probably the top one or two twos, but they would be a two. But again, this goes back to Carolina's got a lot of good wins, and they've got a lot of even losses. They've got decent losses, if that makes sense. And they've got a bunch of the quadrant one games and quadrant one wins and quadrant two. They don't have a lot of those lower level games that have boosted up their record. And so they have a very nice resume at this point.
This is one of those things that makes it so unpredictable because you feel like – I kind of feel like if Carolina and Duke play three times, whichever team wins two is probably going to get whatever the committee considers to be the preferential spot. Well, that's what we thought last year, too, when Carolina beat Duke in Brooklyn. I thought, oh, this is great. Now the Tar Heels will get to go to Charlotte.
Right. And they had a really bad matchup, a really poor performance, and a bad matchup game for them.
I'd rather go to Boise, Idaho, and play a bunch of 6'2 guys from a conference I've never heard of than go to Columbia, South Carolina, and play this year's Texas A&M.
I will also say, just before we get to the Clemson matchup, I think this team has proven itself over the last couple of weeks to be better equipped. Like if this year's team played that Texas A&M game or last year's, maybe Texas A&M still wins and they played very well in that game and all those things. But I do think this year's team appears to be a little better equipped to handle it than last year's team was.
They've beaten more diverse teams
yes.
than last year's team. Last year's team was really good with a favorable matchup. This year's team has done better both in the non-conference and the conference against teams that play very differently.
Yeah. Okay, so Clemson coming up on Saturday. And, Adam, it is going to be an incredibly hostile environment. I think Little John, at least when the Tar Heels are there, is an underrated, difficult place to go play. Clemson is right there on the edge of the of glory. By the way, Bicentennial coming soon. Glorious! Right on the edge of the NCAA tournament. And I don't know if they'd be in or out. I have no idea. But a win over the Tar Heels would help them get in. So they're right there on the edge. It's a 6 o'clock Saturday home game. I don't think Duke went there this year. I think the only time they played Duke was in Cameron. I think that might be wrong. But so it's my point is it's one of their bigger home games of the year, if not the biggest. And they have a veteran team. Shelton Mitchell, Elijah Thomas, and Marquise Reed are still there. They've been there forever. And they're really good ACC players. I mean, Marquise Reed just had 31 the other day in a win against BC. So they have really experienced, good players. It's a big game for them. And Carolina's going to have to play at a really high level, I feel like, to win this game.
Clemson and Duke did not play at Little John Coliseum. So this is the game on the Clemson home schedule right. This year. Even if spring football has started at Clemson, Clemson fans can still pay attention for one Saturday night at 6. And we talked about this a little last time, but I think this is the absolute definition of the other team has more to gain from winning than you do. So you're basically measuring how competitive you are just to win. You'd like to have a chance to finish the year undefeated on the road in the ACC. We know Roy Williams likes that. But Clemson's really good, and a win they probably feel like would put them in pretty good NCAA tournament shape. Carolina's clinched a top 3 seed in the ACC. At some point, you're bound to not be as good as you've been. And could it be Saturday? Don't know. If Carolina wins that game, I think you feel really good about everything they are, because they went out in a scenario where the other team had far more to benefit and got the win. That would be a very, very impressive win.
Carolina's been to Clemson a lot recently, and they've been really competitive games. Remember, last year Clemson won a very competitive game. Carolina really played poorly in the first half. That was that game where Pinson got hurt right at the beginning of the game, and then Barry and Cam Johnson tried to bring the Tar Heels all the way back because they were both hot. Two times ago, it was Barry who had a really big game, I think, if I remember that correctly, and Carolina was able to kind of sneak away in overtime and got a win. So they've been really close, hard-fought games. Clemson has played very well the last two times that Carolina's been there. So it is going to be difficult. And then after that, it's BC. BC just beat Louisville. And so this is I know on paper you go, okay, well, Carolina's probably going to win. These are difficult games.
The environment at Clemson will be tougher than the environment at BC.
Oh, yeah. Well, come on. It's going to be 50-50 at BC.
Right. Boston Carolina Club.
Yeah.
What up?
What up? We'll see you soon. Adam, anything else before we get to our conversation with young Seventh Woods?
Just a fun time of year. I like it when we start trying to figure out who's going where and who's in what spot, figuring out some possible matchups that never actually come to fruition.
Right.
But I spend a lot of time on it. I like this time of year, especially when Carolina's good.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. I mean, it's March, Adam. This show is on. It's March.
That's right.
So get that NCAA tournament committee on the phone, Adam. We can just give them our info. They'd like to know it.
I would like to be on that committee. I think that would be fun. Larry Gallo has talked before about when he was on the NCAA baseball tournament committee.
Yeah, that's right.
And all the information you get and kind of all the cool meetings you get to go to. I'm not a meeting guy, but I'd like going to those meetings. But I get frustrated because – you know, there's somebody sitting in there who's not doing their work, and they just throw out like random opinions that are wrong. If you want to do that, you get yourself a podcast.
Yeah.
Don't get on the NCAA tournament committee.
Don't tell me that Cincinnati should only be a 6 seed. They should be a 4. What are you talking about?
I don't want to hear that. Also, I only want to go to the regions as the rep where there's good places to eat the night before.
Let's get what's most important.
Yeah. So I'd have a few demands before they put me on the committee, but I think like that's a small price to pay for them to have my wisdom.
What's important right now and who drops some wisdom is Seventh Woods.
We've got another national champion on the podcast.
Yes, we do.
And it is Seventh Woods, who we've been talking about a lot lately. And now we've got the genuine article is right here in our classy surroundings. Adjacent to any facilities you might need. Seventh, you've really been playing well lately. How have you felt like you've played? What have you been doing well?
I feel like I've been going out there with a clear mind, just going out there and playing basketball, just focus on the task at hand. I'm understanding I'm going to make mistakes, and I feel like I've been more mental tough and able to move on from the mistakes and just focus more than what's going on at the time.
You and I talked about this, I think, maybe on a TV interview or something, Seventh, I can't remember, but how do you find that balance? I mean, you're such a gifted just athlete. How do you find that balance of going out there and being athletic Seventh Woods, but also kind of diagnosing everything that's happening, but not so much that it slows you down? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. With Kobe being in for whenever I'm on a bench, you understand that scoring is not really what we need at the time when I'm in a game. So every time in the game, I just try to make sure something could happen, make sure something positive happened, whether that's me getting assists, maybe that's me scoring at a time, but just trying to control the game.
You mentioned handling mistakes. How do you try to handle them now as opposed to maybe how do you feel like they snowballed on you a little bit before?
I would get so down on myself that I end up making another mistake, and I realized that lately. And now I just understand that I can control the things I can control, really. So I understand that mistakes are part of basketball. I'm going to make mistakes. And the biggest thing for me is just moving on from mistakes and just focusing on the next play.
How hard was that to kind of come to that realization? Because everybody wants to be perfect when you're out there. But, how hard was it to kind of accept that?
Like you said, everybody wants to be perfect. So making a mistake for anybody is always going to be a tough thing to just carry through. So for me, it's just realizing that it's going to happen. You can't really control it. I mean, you can control it at times, but it's part of basketball. It's going to happen, so you just got to move on from it.
You've made some ridiculous shots at the rim lately. What is helping you finish even better near the basket?
I think I've been taking contact so much better. I had a big layup last game, but through contact, and I think that's been helping me at the rim a lot, just getting stronger, being able to finish through contact.
You played well at Duke. You have played well against Duke in your career and over in Cameron several times. What about that matchup works well for you?
I just love that environment. Duke is probably my favorite place to play other than here, of course. But I think just for me, it's so packed in. It feels like high school all over again for me. My parents actually hate it for the same reason I love it. They hate coming to the games because it's so packed in. But like I said, it's just the whole environment, the whole atmosphere, just the adrenaline gets going.
You mentioned your parents, and you told us on the radio a couple games ago that they had given you some really good advice recently. Mm-hmm. What did you talk to them about, and what did they tell you?
There was a stretch where I wasn't playing good at all, and there was thoughts going through my head just ready to kind of just give up with it a little bit, and they just told me came way too far, just give up with it. They always told me that things will get better. So, I mean, things will get so much worse before they get better, and, they just been in my ear every day just checking on me mentally, physically, and stuff like that.
You seem, and this is totally my opinion, I may be totally wrong, you seem to have just really high expectations of yourself, and you carry a lot on your shoulders. Is that a fair statement?
I agree.
What is that? How difficult is that, and why do you think those kind of burdens are there for you right now?
It's getting better over time, but like just me being me, I have, like you said, high expectations for myself because I know what I'm capable of. I feel like still having nobody seen what I'm really capable of. So that's probably the biggest thing for me, just trying to prove myself every time I step on the court.
How frustrating is that? I know some of that has been your health. A large majority of that has been your health. How frustrating has that been?
It's frustrating. It's very frustrating. But at the time, you just got to overcome it. Just keep on pushing, control the things you can control. Just go out there and be solid every night.
What part of the season was that where you were feeling really?
I think there was a stretch of like 3 or 4 games. I think it was like North Carolina State, Virginia Tech. I'm not sure after that, but it was just a stretch of games where I just didn't play good at all, and it was frustrating.
What's it like to perform so far below what you know you're capable of doing and kind of have to carry the fact that you feel like you're not sure if you're good at this anymore?
Yeah, it's actually crazy because the games that I just mentioned, like North Carolina State and Virginia Tech, I really helped the team on the defensive end, so it wasn't like I was just non-factor. I was still doing things to help the team be successful, but just on the offensive end, I was turning the ball over. Just things that I usually do great, I was doing horrible at the time. It was just frustrating.
Tell us a little bit about your background, about growing up, about just how you got here. Just give us the thumbnail 7th Woods story, but before Carolina.
Yeah, I grew up with 4 brothers. I'm from Columbia, South Carolina. I grew up with 4 brothers, 1 sister. I'm the youngest, so that was tough at the time because my brothers, they all play basketball. So I was always the underdog. I always had to compete with them. Just any other big brother, they would always beat me up, things like that. They would never let me win on the court, but looking back now, that's probably the reason I'm so mentally tough now, stable tough. So I thank them a lot. As far as Carolina, it's been my dream school since, like, I would say 5th grade in elementary. I didn't get an offer until, I believe, my freshman year. So when I got my offer, I started leaning towards Carolina. But down the way, I started to open my options and just look at other schools and things like that. And I believe it was my junior year I committed, and it was the best day of my life.
what did you like about Carolina in fifth grade? What caught your eye, and who did you emulate?
My dad, he was always watching the Carolina games, and I believe it was 2005 when they won that year. I actually watched that national championship game, and that's really, really when I realized that, like, I was a big fan. But even before that, I was always watching.
When you committed, there was a lot going on around Carolina basketball, kind of outside of Carolina with all the NCAA stuff and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. How much did you, when you were being recruited, and we don't have to talk about certain schools or coaches or anything, but how much did you hear negative stuff from other places about Carolina, and did that ever put any doubt in your mind about the Tar Heels?
No, I never doubted it because I feel like Coach was always going to be honest with me. He always told me that all the allegations and stuff about the scandal was nothing to do with men's basketball. So I trusted him with that. Of course, everybody else had something to say. They just other schools that I was used as like a downfall of going to Carolina. So, like I said, it was just trust between me and Coach.
You mentioned committing was the best day of your life. What do you remember about that day?
It was honestly hard because, of course, I turned down my hometown school, South Carolina. But like I said, it was a dream come true to come here, just to be able to commit. We stopped school that day. I actually had a big ceremony. So just that whole thing, just everything I've been through up to that day, it was all let off my shoulders that day.
What were those pressures like? I mean, as you said, you're from Columbia. Mm-hmm. What were those pressures like having South Carolina right there? And I'm sure there was a lot of people around you who wanted you to stay home. Just what was that experience like?
There was really no pressure. Like I said, I built a great relationship with Frank Martin at the time. So I feel like he being a coach, he understood that I felt like North Carolina was the best decision for me. No, he accepted it well. Still to this day, if I see him, we'll talk and we'll just talk. But like I said, there was really no pressure. My family always backed me up on my decision. That's really all I needed.
Were there friends or other people who were kind of encouraging you to stay home?
Yes, most definitely. I think everybody wanted to see me stay home just to be the hometown hero. And I don't think we had anybody stay home in Columbia since Sendarius, so they just wanted me to keep that legacy going on.
Sure.
You had already dealt with a lot of attention nationwide and worldwide by that point in your life.
Yeah.
What was the process like of, oh, someone made this video of me, that's cool, to, oh, some people know who I am now, that's awesome, to, I'm guessing, I'm getting tired of this.
Yeah, like I say, it was fun for a moment, but after a while, I felt like everybody had just had their eyes on me, and it was like, me being me, man, I'm a quiet person that really just wanted to stay out of the way. It was always, not frustrating, but it's always different just to have everybody know who I was everywhere I went, have sidelines packed every game, just people wanting to see something spectacular.
You don't seem like you would like random people coming up to you like, I saw you on YouTube. Was it pressure to feel like, oh, I've got to be this guy they think I am rather than just who I really am?
For like a year after that, it was pressure. I think the year after I actually got hurt, and I just felt like not being able to play was like it wasn't helping me at all because everybody wanted to see this person play basketball for the first time, and I was hurt at the time. So I feel like I had to go out there and prove everybody. But once I started back playing basketball, I just had to feel like just really started to think that it was for me, not for anybody else, and just go out there and perform.
You are a little bit of a quieter person, kind of away from the court. How do you balance that, kind of being a softer spoken, quieter guy, then when you get on the court, needing to be an aggressive guy out there and maybe a leader, particularly with the position that you play?
It's gotten better for me after a while, honestly. That's something I struggled with my whole life. People always say I had to be more vocal on the court, but actually when I step on the court, it's a whole different ball game for me. I understand that I have to talk as a point guard, as a leader on my team, so it comes natural for me, actually.
What changes? I mean, is there like a change in, is there an off-the-court Seventh Woods and an on-the-court Seventh Woods?
Honestly, I guess you could say that, like I said, I feel like I talk a lot on the court. I feel like my teammates would say the same. There's a couple coaches that don't believe I do talk on the court, but just because they know me off the court so well, but like I said, I feel like I hold that part pretty good.
Weren't you a really good baseball player, too, when you were a little kid?
I played baseball for a long time. Baseball was actually more fun for me than basketball, but I was just so much better at basketball. I feel like I had to do it.
But you were good at baseball.
Yeah, I was good.
What position did you play?
I played shortstop for a while, but I feel like I was better at first base.
Why did you enjoy baseball more?
It was just fun at the time. I also played with my cousins, all my friends, so I think that helped a lot.
You were a good hitter, I bet.
Yeah, I was.
that is correct.
Yeah, I actually, there was a game. I'm not sure how old it was, but I had 3 back-to-back home runs, so it was a good game for me.
Then they walked you the fourth time?
No, nah, it was only 3 at-bats for me, so I was 3 for 3.
Tell us a little bit about this season and maybe how it's different from your previous two. You've been the healthiest that you've been here at Carolina. How have you felt that difference, if you have, on the court, and how do you think it's affected you in a negative, positive way, whatever?
I feel like this year is the most that my team's depended on me. Coming in my freshman year, of course, we had Joel and Nate at the backup position. And we was chasing the national championship at the time, so there weren't really minutes for me to come out there and be able to perform like they really needed me to. Last year, I feel like I got off to a great start, but just like that, I missed 18 games with a foot injury. Like you said, this year, I feel like I'm healthy. Feel like I have a solid position, solid. Feel like the coaches depend on me to come in the game and make things happen. Like I said, they always tell me, every time I give them the game, make sure something good happened. Don't let the play step down any. And I'm just going out there with a clear mind, like I said, standing in attack mode, finding my points, finding my teammates, and getting them shots.
A lot of times fans come down and stand by that tunnel where the team runs out before games during warmups. I feel like you stop every time, whether it's to sign autographs or take a picture or whatever they're asking for. Why is that important for you to do?
Because I was that kid before that wanted autographs from, like, the big superstars or however they look at us. It takes literally 5 seconds just to go out there and sign an autograph and take pictures with little kids. So it's something I always do.
You played in that national championship game, right? Didn't you? I mean, you had a minute or two in the game itself. What do you remember just about that experience, about that arena, about that moment? Do you still think about it? I know you're still obviously in the journey here, but do you still think back to it?
There's not a day that goes by that I don't remember that I won a national championship. And like you said, being able to get on the floor in that big time game, that was coaches trusted me enough to put me in. I remember, actually, I think I got a deflection, so that's probably the only thing I remember from that game.
What do you think that team was able to do positively to get to that point that maybe this team has the capability of doing here in the next couple of weeks?
We brought in, and I feel like it was easier for that team because they had lost the year before, so they already knew what they wanted to accomplish. And, versus this year's team, I feel like we're finally getting over the hump. We're finally getting better, buying into the things on the defensive end. I feel like we're about to make a good stretch for hopefully another one.
People always talk about how hard it is to play point guard for Roy Williams, that he has a lot of high expectations. If you could write a little handbook for future Tar Heel freshman point guards, how to play for Roy Williams, what would you put in there?
I would say just do exactly what he tells you whenever he tells you. That's probably the biggest thing. Give it your all on the defensive end. He loves a point guard that can cause havoc on the defensive end. Just push the ball as fast as you can from point A to point B. He loves to quick pace. He loves running the ball. And that'll be probably – that's the two things he tells me the most, guard the ball and just no turnovers. So that'll be my two biggest advice.
A lot of guys have mentioned that the first Louisville game this year as – a turning point in this season. What happened in your mind in that game, and how has that game, even though at the time it was obviously a negative, how has that made you guys better as you've moved past it?
I feel like the players and the coaches were embarrassed after that game, man. We made it our point to make sure nothing like that ever happened again. So, like I said, that was a big loss. I think it was like the biggest loss in the Smith Center. So, like I said, we was embarrassed, so we just wanted to go out there, prepare, push that game behind us, but just build off and learn from that game going on to the future. And like I said, we went back to Louisville with that in mind. And pretty much every game from there on out, we always remember that Louisville game that we're capable of being beaten. So we just try to go out there and perform.
Who's the guy in that locker room who's the most different than how we probably think they are?
Ooh, most different. I would say probably Kobe. Because Kobe on the court, basketball Kobe, he's just always locked in, but in the locker room, he's a little goofball. Like, he always reminds us that he's still a freshman, so he's definitely fun to be around, though.
Have you ever been a goofball? I feel like you were not a goofball from day one.
I definitely have my moments around my friends. They definitely know a different me than a lot of people know, so yeah.
How so?
I've been around them my whole life. Like, my parents, my mom always get not get mad, but she always gives us a little look when somebody calls me quiet because she's known me my whole life. She she knows, I guess, the real me, I guess.
She's listening to Siri going, soft-spoken. What? Yeah, that's not the seventh I know.
Yeah.
Two things quickly about one about Kobe. Where do you stand on the Mr. Pickle slash Lil Gerb nickname for Garrison conversation?
I don't know. Like, Kobe has done a great job of convincing me that that's actually his nickname. So, I really don't know who to believe or whose side to choose on that one.
Secondly, so I've heard so many different reasons why. So where did seventh come from? How did your parents decide on seventh as your name? Obviously a very unique name.
My dad named me that, and it comes from Genesis chapter 2, verse 3, and how God completed his work in 7 days, and on 7 days he rested. So it's really a completion. That's what it means, seventh. It's for completion.
Was that, I mean, how many different stories, jokes, comments have you heard growing up about that? It is obviously a pretty unusual name.
Growing up, I used to hate my name, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I hated it because, like you said, all the jokes. And then I had to explain it every time I met somebody new, still to this day. So
yeah, Seven hated that last name. He's like, geez, again? This guy's asking me this?
Yeah, so like every person, every single person I ever met, I had to explain where my name came from. So, I mean, just me being young, I didn't really like talking, so I didn't really like it much until then.
Did the teachers always mess it up on the first day of school when they're calling the roll?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like they always thought they was reading it wrong, so they always try to Steven or things like that. So.
Oh, dude, see, now I know this feeling. So first of all, I mean, Jones is my middle name, not even my first name.
Yeah.
So my first name's really hard to pronounce. And then Jones, of course, everybody thinks it's a last name. So it was disaster on the first day of school, man. But then, like, I would dread them reading off the list because I knew they'd mess it up.
Well, that's the worst because you got kids sitting in there who you don't know and you want to impress them. And then the teacher's, like, singling you out in front of everybody. Yeah. And that's all anybody remembers from the first day.
I remember, so gym class, ninth grade.
Not that Jones
is not that I remember.
It was sunny and 83.
But so I was a physical specimen. Not as big a physical specimen as I am now back then in ninth grade. And the gym team was like, all right, now I'm going to try not to mess up anybody's name. And he's like, all right. Now, like, for this first one example, I don't know what to say about this. And I was just like, oh, God, it's going to be terrible. All right, sorry. That was a little side note for you there, Seven. What do you like to do when you're not playing basketball?
Sleep.
Yes.
I was asleep right before I came here. So
and I'll be sleeping after this interview.
I definitely plan my days around practice and taking naps. So sleep is my best thing.
How about when you're awake but not playing basketball?
I play the game a lot. I actually got a new camera, so I've been using that a lot lately.
Really?
So, yeah.
What do you like to do?
I'm still learning, so now I just go to my apartment, go to the top floor, and just take pictures of, like, the city and stuff like that.
Oh.
Yeah.
A couple other guys are into pictures, like former guys. Like Deion Thompson's kind of getting into it, and Sean likes messing around with all that different equipment he's got. What is it about that appeals?
I guess it's just a way to express how you see things differently from other people.
I like that answer.
Yeah.
Can you sleep right before a game?
I could, but I don't.
I mean, I know like an hour before you can't, but like Coach Williams has to take his nap.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have to take a nap?
No, I actually don't take a nap. I get right after pregame meal, I get going, get prepared.
Okay.
How about you, Adam?
I can sleep anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
Especially if like the car or plane is moving.
Oh, yeah.
See you later.
Yeah. Every plane ride, I'm always the first one to sleep.
Yeah.
Probably second after Brandon.
That's risky, though. That's risky to be asleep around this group.
Definitely.
Has anybody ever gotten you?
I think Brandon Huffman's got me a couple times. He's the only one to look out for, really, though.
We have asked this question to a bunch of guys as we've talked to him through the year, but it seems like every guy has a guy on the coaching staff outside of Coach Williams. There's an assistant or a staff member, maybe it's Hoots or Sean or whatever, that's kind of your guy to go to if you just want to talk about something or have a concern or whatever. Do you have a guy on the coaching staff, and if so, who is it?
The person who talks to me the most and I've been talking to the most, probably Coach Rod, because he's like the first assistant. He's always on the sideline, and he kind of lets the players beat himself. Like a lot of times we get frustrated with coaches, as they probably get frustrated with us. He'd be the first one to come listen to us. So probably Coach Rod.
A lot of times when you come out of the game, you end up sitting next to Coach Rod, and he always looks like he has something to say. What's he telling you?
Just whatever happens at the moment, it's always different. He always has the right thing to say, and like I said, you can come to him for confidence. He's always gonna keep it real with you, but he also know he's been there before, so he know how it goes.
If we asked your teammates to describe you, what do you think they would say?
Probably stage to itself, probably. I feel like all my teammates know my favorite thing to do is sleep, so I feel like they'll definitely mention that. I don't know. I'd probably just say cool, calm, and collect, honestly.
A lot of people know your pre-Carolina story as, oh, he's the YouTube star.
Yeah.
But you had to deal with some personal hard times also. How do you think that helped make you who the seventh we know today?
Dealing with things like that early definitely helped. Like I've been through it before, so I feel like I'm prepared for anything to happen. Like I said, my parents always been in my corner, so they've helped me mold myself into the person I am today, just like anything else.
Does having dealt with actual legitimate tragedy help you kind of keep things in perspective if you commit two turnovers in a game?
Yeah, definitely. No, two turnovers in a game is not the end of the world for me. I've dealt with so much worse. So, like you said, I've been to the lowest of lows. So, I understand that things going to happen. We always bounce back.
All right, we're in a key stretch here for the team itself, just a couple games left in the regular season. Then you're going into postseason. What in your mind is important for you individually, you as a team, as you guys try to be the best you can be here over the next couple of weeks?
Just continue to push. Coach always says that we control our own destiny right now with the way things are feeling with ACC. So, like I said, we got Clemson this weekend. Just start with them and focus on every game. Just treat every game like the biggest game because it is. So, like I said, we just go out there and play every game like it's our last because we want to finish on top. That's our goal, so we're that close to doing it.
We mentioned, of course, you're a national champion. You're also part of last year's team that lost kind of unexpectedly to Texas A&M. How does that game help you maybe think about this postseason differently than you might have otherwise?
I mean, we understood that we can be beat by anybody. Coach still would mention the Texas A&M loss to this day, so – we definitely haven't forgot about it. We definitely understand how things go postseason. And we just got to go out there and prepare for every game as if we can be knocked off by anybody because it's very possible.
What does he say about the Texas A&M game when he talks about it?
He usually will bring it up after somebody doesn't box out or get a rebound because I feel like that's what we got. That's why we lost that game because of rebounding, things like that, and just being tough. So if somebody don't box out, somebody, you know, just show a lack of toughness, he'll definitely bring up the A&M game.
Our conversation with Seventh Woods presented by AT&T, proud supporter of Carolina Athletics. More for your thing. That's our thing at AT&T. Carolina Insider Podcast brought to you by UNC Healthcare and MyUNC Chart. Keep track of your stats with MyUNC Chart. Visit the website myuncchart.org to sign up. And Adam, I thought we'd use some Seventh Woods stats since he was our guest. I thought he had a really quietly nice couple of minutes against Syracuse. Three assists, no turnovers, just 7 minutes. But it was one of those, you weren't exactly going to take Kobe White out of this game more than that. It wasn't anything Seventh did incorrectly. It was just Kobe White was playing that well. And so another game now that Seventh Woods has come in and just given you steady, solid minutes, positive things when he's on the floor, and good contributions.
Several games in a row now where he comes in and either the Tar Heels push out the lead they already had or cut into a deficit they're facing. He's been very steady, what you need from a veteran point guard.
A reminder that whether your favorite seat is courtside or upper level, you can head to StubHub and grab 100% verified tickets. StubHub, official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. StubHub, be there. And while you're out there in internet land, why don't you visit unc.edu? You can see the impact Tar Heels make every day in North Carolina and learn more about what's happening in Chapel Hill. Adam, I would like you to fire up the tinkly piano music because there's a summer tea package available at Pinehurst. Three nights accommodations at the Carolina Hotel. Four rounds of golf, breakfast, and dinner daily, all at Pinehurst, where golf in the cradle of North Carolina is waiting for you.
So it's a tea package, T-E-E.
Yeah.
Not like they're going to fix you a cup of tea.
No.
Okay.
We're not playing in Glock England. See, Adam, I can't get both words in the same podcast at a high level. Adam, do you have a list?
I do.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
By the way, I was checking out our international downloads the other day.
Yeah.
We had a download in Pakistan and two in Iran.
I bet I know who that was. The what up to New Zealand? Big pod listeners over there in New Zealand. Yeah.
That's right. Good day, even though that's probably your neighbors from Australia.
What if there's a big rivalry and you've just insulted them?
I bet there is. Wait, don't you think there is? I remember when I was little and I would play, like, I would always set up, like, a fake basketball league on my Nerf hoop, you know?
Right.
And so, and there'd be countries represented.
Wow, you did it, like, FIBA style?
Oh, yeah. And so New Zealand and Australia were always rivals. They're in the same area of the world. Surely they have a rivalry.
I kind of picture them as friendly chaps who enjoy seeing the other do well. Right. They've each got their thing.
They know some of the challenges that they go through.
Right. They speak the same language. Australia's clearly bigger, but they respect New Zealand.
Yeah, bigger doesn't always mean better.
On to the list. Let's see. Boy, there's some fun stuff on the list. Okay, Diamond Hill's got a win on Tuesday via the walk-off home run. Did you see the video of the walk-off home run?
I did.
It was powered by the pod.
That really, I have enjoyed seeing a couple of key Diamond Heel moments this year with the pod right there in the background.
Yep.
Tar Heels off to a great start. They lost one game in the midweek to VCU, snapped a long home winning streak. But, and this is something I remember. Remember you and I would do baseball and Carolina would lose a midweek game and people would be like, what? How in the world could they lose to Campbell?
Is Carolina not better than Virginia Commonwealth?
Right. And it's a different world in baseball. Everybody's going to drop a couple of those midweek games, just how it is. And so it's been a good start. I believe Diamond Heels are 8-1. So a good start to the year. Clearly a team that appears to be a team that is one that can challenge in the ACC and, you know, be a national seed and all those things that Carolina baseball has become accustomed to. And if you didn't listen to it a couple of weeks ago, talk to Scott Forbes. That was when we had a double pod. We had Sylvia Crawley on and Scott Forbes, Coach Forbes, the associate head coach, kind of previewed the season. So if you're interested in the baseball side of things, then go back and listen to that one.
There's been a lot of interest in your commencement speech. I feel like Jacksonville High School should sell tickets online for this.
Has there been? Someone sent us their...
Yes, Bo Hamrick.
Yeah, Bo Hamrick. Thank you. So he had done a commencement speech. He was like, here, if you want to just check out what I did, take a look here. And
I assumed you would just copy a verbatim and use that.
And then just cross out the school wherever he was.
Right. But then also, Wesley Lindsay pointed out that seersucker would be the way to go for you.
Yeah, I did see
How
that.
Do you feel about that?
It takes a confident man to go seersucker.
Yes.
Now, I have seersucker pants and shorts.
I don't think are appropriate.
I don't feel like I can roll out there in a seersucker short combo. Now.
You look like a six-year-old boy.
I mean.
Hello, friends.
If it's just a random summer day, will I wear the seersucker shorts? Yes.
Right. Not when you're given the commencement
speech. Probably not for. Now, I would be lying to you, Adam, if I said I haven't at least thought in my lifetime of purchasing a seersucker suit.
Maybe this is the time.
I think I could pull it off. I don't know. It would be a very confident play.
Yeah. But I think it would immediately make these high school students want to know what this person has to say. I do appreciate the way this gentleman has accessorized it with a jaunty straw cap. And he's smoking a pipe.
That's quite a pocket square he has.
I would like to hear what advice he has that can possibly put me on the path to end up just like him. You can't just go, if you're going to go seersucker, not just the pants. It's got to be full-on suit.
Yeah.
Do it for the pod.
Yeah.
So if you are a pod listener and you own a clothing store, just let me know. I'll come see you, and you can help hook me up with a seersucker suit.
Or if you have a seersucker suit and you wear it on the regular.
and you think it might fit me.
Well, I was going to say, if you could let us know what sort of response you get from the teenage age band, that might be helpful. I think if you wear the seersucker suit, the likelihood of me going goes up quite a bit, just to see what happens. Thank you, Wesley Lindsay.
Can't wait.
Lindsay Carroll went antiquing,
yeah,
as we often do, and found a 1990-91 Tar Heel basketball team calendar.
I saw that.
Those calendars were awesome. I love those. I had one every single year. They had the headshots, and all the players were wearing suits because they were classy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it had all the games listed, and I think maybe like home games would be squares and road games would be triangles perhaps. Can't remember for sure. Man, those were awesome. I don't know if you know, Jones, Roy Williams used to sell those calendars out of the back of his car.
Drive around the state.
Yep. So that was a good find by Lindsay Carroll. And, of course, Big Grits was on there, and Big Grits had early Big Grits-style hair in that picture.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Keep going. I've thought of a couple of things I want to talk about, too, but keep going.
Just make a list. speaking of Big Grits, I got to see him on Wednesday night at a Freddie Kiger event.
Yeah, you guys on the grind.
Yeah, some of us were there celebrating the 10th anniversary of the 2009 NCAA championship.
How'd that night go, Adam?
It was good. Tyler Zeller was there. We love Tyler Zeller. He's been on the pod.
Yeah, he has.
An academic All-American. And Steve Kirshner was there. Of course, everyone, I think, knows Kirsch, Carolina's director of athletic communications. Big Grits was there. Freddie Kiger was there. What else do you need? Listen to who I just said was there. That sounds like an awesome night. Who wouldn't want to come?
Right.
Jones.
It's a who's who. No, that's not a fair assessment. I was not on the panel for this particular event.
That's funny because there were five chairs and only four were filled.
I was not on the panel for this particular event. Mm-hmm. And I had some obligations and could not come as a fan.
Right.
But I am such a fan of all four of you guys that I would have enjoyed it because I don't often get to hear what any of you have to say. So I would have enjoyed it, but some obligations kept me away. But I know you guys knocked it out of the park.
Got to meet a lot of pod listeners, Ashley Creech, Dave Drake, Rick Rutherford, all those folks.
Ashley Creech like called me out on Twitter.
Yeah.
For not being tough enough to be there.
Well, it's like how when
you guys gave a pretty tough. You look like a pretty good like WWE tag team. You guys could be up there like with how tough you looked in your arms crossed serious face.
I took a lot of good arms crossed serious face pictures. Dave Drake works with the GAA. The GAA folks are so nice.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They're nice. And Dave Drake and his son are big into the rap game.
Mm.
So they were very interested in some of the rankings, as I think a lot of people are.
Oh, yeah. I know I am.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, Anthony Dion was the first to send it.
Yes, this was very helpful.
This is a graphic which helps you tell the difference. So apparently there's a baby.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was a baby. I just thought there was Da Baby and Lil Baby. But there's also Baby, who, of course, as we know, is the CEO of Cash Money Records.
Yeah, that's right.
Who produce much of the hottest vinyl out on the scene. So I don't know that we can repeat many of the things that are in that graphic, but it was very helpful in keeping them apart.
Yeah, helped us organize our thoughts.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the artistic renderings in which Lil Baby is surrounded by stacks of bills, y'all.
Yeah.
The conclusion for all three is none are a baby,
yeah,
is what the graphic says.
They are mature adults.
DaBaby's real name is Jonathan Kirk. Did you know that?
Oh, are you allowed to throw that out there right now?
That's in the graphic. Lil Baby is Dominique Jones, and Baby is Brian Williams. We also got to meet several pod listeners at the Syracuse game, including Ethan Wees and his dad.
Yes.
Got to meet several folks. That was a lot of fun. Always like talking to people about the pod. Oh, and also at the Syracuse game, Mike Navarro presented us with a goose from his son, Cooper.
He did. We thank Cooper for the goose. It will.
That sentence has not been said before.
It will proudly be displayed once the new, sleek, up-to-date, new age Pod World headquarters is up and running. The goose is currently sitting on my desk at work. It's just staring at me, imploring me to go even harder on the grind. But it's ready. And Adam, it is. We've said this before. It's going to be a really glorious couple of days, not just in new, sleek, fancy, modern Pod World headquarters, but when we get to really figure out where we want to put all of our podcast memorabilia.
I don't think that the constructors...
You need to get yourself to IKEA soon and get us some shelves.
I'm not sure that the construction folks understand how much room we need for our memorabilia.
Yeah.
We have a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, just the other day, I met the actual hands who created Tar Heel Bird.
Is that right?
Yeah. It wasn't the Syracuse game. It was a couple home games ago. And they wanted to know if we still had Tar Heel Bird. And I said, of course. Tar Heel Bird won several big games for the Tar Heels. It's sitting right next to our big head picture in my desk at home.
I forgot about the big head picture.
I know exactly where it is.
We really, you know what we need to get? We've had people... It's like once every couple of weeks we get the photo of there is an adult beverage that's called Goose Honker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
We need to get some of that.
Oh, now.
For display only,
oh,
Adam.
I got it.
For the new Pod World headquarters.
Jones, thanks for bringing in this display beverage. It's empty. What?
All six of these are gone.
I just thought they'd travel better.
I just poured them out. I figured we didn't want them to eat through the can.
John, we've gotten several tweets about Red Panda lately. Mm. There's only one home game left, and I'm just going to go ahead because I don't want anybody to get their hopes up for the Duke game and then they don't enjoy the Duke game. Red Panda's not going to be there.
Yeah, not coming.
You won't see Red Panda at the Smith Center this year. So John Howes, amongst others, it's not going to happen. That doesn't mean Red Panda is any less of an elite performer. It just means that's what has happened. Just two more things. One, kind of a random news note. Lee Pace tweeted out that Chaz Surratt has moved to outside linebacker.
You need accompanying that news was that picture of Chaz looking all swole, looking like he had been with Adam and me in the gym.
Yeah,
looking
no doubt.
All ripped.
Yeah, throwing around some iron.
Well, and I think it's a credit to Chaz Surratt to make that move because I do think that when you look at the roster makeup, it's a move that makes sense for him. But it's not necessarily an easy decision, particularly when you're leaving the quarterback spot. Chaz did play some linebacker in high school, and so it's not going to be totally foreign to him. He's an intelligent guy, and so I do think all of those things make it make sense, but you still, as an individual, have to kind of come to grips with that and understand that you're going to be playing a different spot. And so I think it's a credit to Chaz to be willing to do that, to do it in a positive way by all reports. And I think he could play there. You know, I think Carolina has an opportunity, particularly at that position, and with the way that Jay Bateman likes to play defense, which is very, I'll use the hot basketball term, it's really a positionless defense at times for Jay Bateman, the way that he likes to play. And so you're going to have a lot of guys that are kind of physically the same makeup out there flying around, and I think Chaz Surratt fits that physical makeup that Carolina's looking for. And so I think he has an opportunity to play. And then my final point in all this is if you don't follow Lee on Twitter, you are missing the best way to get football news outside of the direct football links or the with the direct football team. Lee is the absolute best. He has behind-the-scenes photos all the time. He is with the team more than anyone else as far as a media member. You got to follow him, and you'll know a lot of what is going on. And we've had Lee on several times. Probably going to have him again on in the spring after basketball season's over to kind of give us a spring update. And so hope you're following Lee. I think it's at Lee Pace tweet because there's a very famous actor also named Lee Pace.
Really?
Yeah. He played He was in one of my Marvel movies. In fact, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Now, Adam McCoy sent us this news story. Everyone in this news story, as far as I know, was wearing pants, but Adam McCoy correctly, in my opinion, assessed that this would be a story that we would enjoy, and as he says, it demands pod analysis. This is from the Associated Press, so you know this is serious stuff. The headline is as follows. Two arrested in buffet brawl over crab legs. Okay.
Adam and I were both hungry.
Huntsville, Alabama is our dateline today. Alabama police say a dispute over crab legs at a dinner buffet ended in a brawl that left two people facing misdemeanor charges. Huntsville police officer Gerald Johnson says he was eating at the certain buffet restaurant when a fight broke out. He was there already. That's good detective work,
yep,
right there.
He was ready.
Johnson tells WHNT-TV, the heart of Alabama, that diners were using service tongs like fencing swords, and plates were shattering, and a woman was beating a man.
The tongs as fencing swords, at that point, if you've dedicated yourself to a fight at this point, just go and hit each other. The tongue, I mean, how much room are the tongs really giving you?
Yeah, it's not increasing your reach by that much.
Right. And, well, I guess you could do some damage with tongs depending on what you grab a hold of. But, I mean, it doesn't feel like a real wise use of the item.
I like how Detective Johnson knew that these tongs were not being used, like, to jab or as any other sort of sword. Clearly a fencing sword.
A saber.
Yeah, he knew what weapon these were. Johnson says diners had been waiting in line for crab legs for more than 10 minutes.
Whoa.
And they lost their tempers once the food came out. You don't say.
10 minutes?
Yeah, 10 minutes for crab legs at the buffet. Let's go.
Jameis Winston will have none of this.
Just be glad he didn't have any tongs. The station reports Chiquita Jenkins is charged with assaulting John Chapman.
Chiquita.
That may be the woman who was beating a man.
Come on.
John suffered a cut on his head. Chapman is charged with disorderly conduct. Court records aren't available to show whether either person has a lawyer. Some enterprising lawyer in Alabama is going to take that pro bono and make a little name for him or herself. Using the tongs as fencing swords. That's all for the list.
I have a couple of tweets that I need to address because they were directly about me.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
First of all, Ben Meredith said he loved that the producers decided to rehash me accidentally calling Coby White Cody on one of the BMW first half powerful calls of the game or something along those lines on the Tar Heel Sports Network. And Ben says, hashtag savage. That's the first time all year I let a Cody instead of a Kobe slip out. And it was used. That's all right. I'll live.
I'm not sure I even would have heard the difference.
Well, you're not exactly the authority on calling people the right name either, Adam.
Also a good point.
James Ludman was really excited about your recent column about Raycom / Jefferson Pilot. And he said he'd like to give a little personal what up to Peachtree TV, local station 17 in the Atlanta area. He said, so thankful they have shown so many Carolina basketball games this year when covered by Raycom. Watching the Heels take on the Orange via regular antenna here in Marietta equals no buffering for the win. So thanks, Peachtree TV. A lot of big-time Tar Heel fans in the Atlanta area. Thanks for hooking them up. That didn't have anything to do with me, but this one did. Rick Rutherford says, after careful observation from multiple direct views of Jones during tonight's Syracuse game, I have concluded that due to friction, he has no fingerprints on his right hand. His fingertips are continuously rubbing against his pen and the heel of his hand. Okay. So, it's not like I walk around all day, every day, like with my fingers like this, right? But I do during the game. It's like when I'm in it to win it because I know the rules, trademark, then I do kind of do that. Like, it's just a little nervous. I don't even know if it's nervous. It's like when I'm focused in. It's just something that I do to keep moving.
It's like Michael Jordan putting his tongue out.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah.
And look, I take off my wedding ring. I'll move that around on my left hand a lot. It's just it's something that I do. I'll move the pin around.
Let he who is without unusual habit cast the first stone.
Then Jacob Suttles sent this shot where I make a surprised face when looking down at my spotter board and said, when you look at your stat sheet and realize Kobe had 34. I don't know what actually happened in that moment.
I like to think that you were just kind of taken aback by how good those spotter boards were.
Yeah.
I think it was probably early in the game. That's good work. That's good craftsmanship.
Boy, the RGB on these school colors is exactly correct. Yeah. Whoever put these together is a heck of a craftsman. That's what I think.
Was Jim Boeheim right in your line? Could that have been it?
Hey, I'd like to thank Jim Boeheim, Adam. He is way down on the list of coaches in my way. In fact, Jim Boeheim sat down he either sat down or stood directly up to yell at the officials.
So he's not even receiving votes on the Sebastian.
Not even receiving votes. So thank you, Coach Boeheim. I know you're a legend, but you just add one more column to your distinguished career.
That probably will go above Hall of Fame on his resume.
National champion, Hall of Fame, didn't get in Jones's way in the Smith Center in a February game of 2019. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, Coach Boeheim. Adam, we have a couple of stories to do. So we have two a little bit shorter stories, one relating to Syracuse and one relating to Clemson.
Apropos.
So a nice place to put them right here in between the Syracuse and Clemson game.
Nestled amidst them.
Yeah, right there in those two different, slightly different shades of orange. They're going to be right there together. So we'll go in order of the games and how we read the story. So our first storyteller is Agatha Donker. And Agatha, I love that last name. I told you I call Luka Doncic the Donk.
Yeah.
On 2K.
Yep.
I wonder if anybody calls Agatha the Donk.
You do now.
Agatha Donk. You and I are boys / girls now, Agatha. All right. Agatha has our first story. So fire up Mr. Goosehunkers, not the adult beverage. Not the goose that's keeping me on my grind, but the original Mr. Goosehunkers, because Agatha the Donk story starts like this. As Adam's rapid reactions, so rapid, Adam, so rapid, by the way, after the Syracuse game noted, the Heels are now 8-1 since the Orange joined the conference. Agatha's story, Adam, is about the one. In late December 2013, I bought a lovely home in Chapel Hill. But as my roommate and I had 6 weeks left on our apartment lease, we were moving in slowly over said time frame. On an unseasonably warm but stormy Saturday in January, remember this key fact for later, Adam. After an unseasonably cold week prior, Agatha was dropping a load of stuff off at the house and planning to return to the apartment to watch the Heels' first conference game against the Cuse. Unfortunately, when Agatha opened the front door, she was confronted by a waterfall in the kitchen. A foot of water all over the first floor and a great deal of ceiling on the floor, rather than either where it was supposed to be or on the roof. Nice. Yes, while it was unseasonably cold, a pipe had frozen. And then when it warmed up, it burst, sending 40,000 gallons of water through a house Agatha had not yet lived in. This is a big thumbs down so far. So what was Agatha's first reaction? It was to call her dad, who had been solving problems for her all her life that she couldn't, but she couldn't that day.
The original Donk.
Right, because the OG Donk was in Syracuse with an old colleague who was on the faculty there to root for the Tar Heels against the Orange in the aforementioned first conference game. She wasn't going to call her dad while he was watching the Heels. She couldn't do that. She couldn't do that, Adam, to anyone. Yeah, Agatha, thank you. So
She called her real estate agent instead. He had helped Agatha figure out what to do. And quickly, Agatha's going to give us the notes for what to do in case you encounter this situation.
That's good.
Turn the water off.
Okay.
Call the insurance company. Call the HOA. Call a recovery service. Four easy steps. That 40,000 gallons of water like it's never even been there. And she proceeded to do those things. The unseasonably warm part of the day? Agatha was in flip-flops, and while trying to turn off the water at the house main in my crawl space, sliced open her foot and had to pause in the, in the stopping the water part of the day to get a tetanus shot. Once I stopped the water and the bleeding, Agatha sat in the car waiting for the recovery service to arrive, on hold with her insurance company, listening to the game on the radio where I'm sure we were giving you a wonderful explanation of what was going on, while the stormy weather set off tornado sirens around town. Just as my insurance company answered, the storm blew down a tree that landed on the trunk of my car and dented it shut. And the game? Well, the Tar Heels lost. It's the 1-8-1 record. If I don't, Carolina only scored like 43 points, I think, in this game, if I remember correctly.
It wasn't good.
It was not a good day. The Heels could be 50-1 against Syracuse in conference games, says Agatha, but when she dies, she will remember the one.
I bet.
The day her house flooded, a tree fell on her car, and the orange beat the pants off her Tar Heels. But every victory over Syracuse has been a little sweeter for it.
I like how that day was so bad that in her recap, she just totally left out the tetanus shot. It would have been 1A on my list. But that's a heck of a day.
Well, you also are afraid of needles, so that's key.
Also true.
That's key to remind people about that part. Okay. Now, here's the got to remind you about this. This is the two negatives equal a positive double story time.
Right, yeah.
So that was a bad day for Agatha. Our next storyteller, Derek Brown. Derek, with the upcoming Clemson trip, thought he would submit in an edited version of a story he has sent us previously. So, Adam, refire up Mr. Goosehunkers, keeping me on that grind. And Derek's story starts like this. Like you, Jones, I am an Onslow County native. You ever been a graduation speaker, Derek?
How do you feel about seersucker?
And proud of my North Carolina roots. What up, Tar Heel State? I added that part in. In February of 2001, my then-girlfriend and I, both in our late teens, made the trek to Little John Coliseum to see the number one Heels play Clemson in what was going to be Derek's first Carolina road game. By that point, he and his girlfriend had been dating for more than a year, and things were getting pretty serious, Derek may say. Watch out. Somebody just rented a spa de ville. That was despite her being from upstate New York and thus being a Syracuse fan. The orange, bringing us all together.
Watch your feet!
As it turns out, in hindsight, this game is probably when the wheels started coming off for Matt Doherty's first team.
Yes.
Also a bad day in the sporting world all the way around. A
lot of fun memories in these stories.
Carolina was down big in the first half, made a game of it in the second, but eventually lost by 10. Back in my youth, I could get feisty when Carolina was losing. Parentheses, more on that later. My visible irritation kept growing stronger every time Clemson would do the C-L-E-M-S-O-N chant, which happened more and more as it appeared they were going to knock off Carolina. In a misguided effort to make me feel better, my northern-oriented girlfriend said, "Well, I am surprised they can spell at all this far south," before quickly putting her hand over her mouth when she realized what had just come out. It is at this point, this is really impressive info right here, that I told her that this particular part of South Carolina, where Clemson is actually farther north than the part of North Carolina that Derek is proud to be born and raised in. Needless to say, it was pretty quiet drive back as Derek was fired up by all these things. Now, I gotta tell you, I don't know the latitude longitude of Jacksonville, but Derek says that Clemson's latitude is 34.6834 degrees north, while Snead's Ferry, where Derek is from, its latitude 34.5527 degrees north. That's some straight geographical knowledge. Fast forward to 2019. Adam, good news. These two kids have been happily married for 15 years now. I truly realized she was a keeper when she semi-understood me breaking the step stool her father had made for her when she was a toddler just the next season. Seriously, how can I justify that except for it was the 8-20 season after all?
The latitude of Jacksonville is 34.7541 north. I don't know exactly where that fits in the others you mentioned.
All right, hold on. What was it again?
34.7541.
Just tenths of a degree north, farther north than Clemson.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
We just learned something.
Yeah, we did. Thank you, Derek.
I would have never guessed that ever. I picture Clemson as being basically right next to Atlanta.
Yeah.
It turns out it may not be.
Okay. Adam, anything else?
Now, this was an informative, entertaining,
yeah, I feel like
educational part of the pod.
Know a little bit more than I did before I showed up here today.
Yeah.
So, Carolina Clemson, 6 o'clock on Saturday night. We'll be on the air 5 p.m. And then next week, we have a show on Tuesday, as normal. That'll be the day Carolina plays BC. We'll break down the Clemson game, look ahead to BC, have a good guest. Then later in the week, we'll have Duke preview, BC recap, more good guests. We've got some guests lined up here over the next few weeks. I hope you're going to enjoy. A lot coming up as we get into the postseason. But for now, we're going to let Seventh Woods and the RZA send us out on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Seventh Woods, and I will see you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.